This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. Good morning. Coming up this hour, a new graphic novel celebrates boxer and Galveston native Jack Johnson. We meet the author and illustrator. Also, our full menu foodies dish on their favorite Mexican restaurants in the Houston area. First, though, the city of Houston is suing the state of Texas over the so-called Death Star Law, House Bill 2127, which would block cities and counties from regulating everything from the environment to labor codes without approval from the state legislature. The new law is slated to take effect September 1st. That's just one of a number of developments in the world of politics since the start of what was for many a long holiday weekend. So let's catch you up now on those developments in our regular Wednesday political roundup today with Party Politics co-host and University of Houston Associate Professor of Political Science Geronimo Cortina and Mark Jones, Political Science Fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Geronimo, Mark, good morning.
Morning, Craig.
Morning.
Let's start with the city of Houston's lawsuit filed in a Travis County court. The suit argues HB 2127 violates the home rule provision of the Texas State Constitution. First, what is home rule? What is that provision?
Well, home rule is the ability to give cities of a certain size the ability to manage their affairs. When it was created over 100 years ago, the logic was that cities should be allowed to be unfettered way, determine quality of life issues, things that affected local residents. And so from that came the home rule provision of the Constitution.
Geronimo, the city's suit declares the law, quote, unconstitutional, void, and unenforceable. Why would the city consider it unenforceable?
Well, they consider it unenforceable because it's very wide. The net that this law casts is very wide. So in order for the state to be involved in the daily policymaking, implementation, and monitoring of such policies would require basically to have state officials, you know, seeing if a beehive, for example, right, has been taken off properly or not, et cetera, et cetera. And given the size of these cities, especially the city of Houston, it's impossible to monitor what's going on in terms of labor policies or environmental codes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, it's going to be a very interesting case because on the other hand, even though that we have home rule, cities in Texas are creatures of the state. That means that the state creates the cities, and the cities do not necessarily have that, legal standing in terms of how they can do that or not. That is, the state legislature can say, well, now you're going to be something else, right? You're going to partition Houston in two or three or four, whatever it is. So it's going to be very interesting to see because obviously the ability, and no mayor in the state of Texas is going to be happy with such an implementation.
Mark, it does seem as if maybe the question here is where do you draw the line between what is something that the state should automatically have the authority to regulate and what local communities should have the authority to regulate and how granular you can get.
Right. And this is, in many ways, this is a reaction by the Republican legislature and Governor Abbott to a growing trend among progressive-run cities and counties to effectively adopt progressive policies via city ordinance or local rulings. And so this is pushing back against it. It is really going to open up Pandora's box on September 1st because one thing that wasn't done when this legislation was crafted was a line-by-line review of all ordinances across all of the over 1,000 cities in Texas to figure out what things would be permissible under state law and what would be not. The only way we're going to find out is going to be through lawsuits. And so I think at the end of the day, what's going to happen is we're going to find that lots of things that there's strong consensus at the city level, these are things that the city should have, are going to be challenged in court and potentially overturned. And so it'll be up to the legislature when it returns, but that's not until January of 2025 to actually rectify that. In the interim, there's going to be a real mess. I think at the end of the day, while this it may be blocked in Travis County Court because that's a Democratic judge, by the time it reaches the Texas Supreme Court, as Geronimo said, the Supreme Court's probably going to rule in favor of the legislature because the legislature, what the legislature giveth, it can take it away. And this way, it's taking away some home rule properties of the cities.
Geronimo, is it your impression that what the state is trying to do here has more to do with existing ordinances, specific ones that they really take issue with, or is it about the future and authority and basically saying, oh, you know, cities and counties can do what they want until we disagree with them?
Well, I think it's a mix of both. And I think that, you know, this is a trend of having control, especially in these particular cities that are going to be or tend to be more democratic, right, in terms of how residents vote in particular elections. So it's a political move. It's a political move that we have seen, you know, over the past. And it's a break in the, you know, Republican tradition. And the Republican Reaganist tradition was that the best government was the local government, the government that was close to the people. So we're seeing, you know, breaking apart from that particular tradition. And that is going to also raise some eyebrows in this big tent that is called the Republican Party of Texas.
Does that longstanding impression of the Republican model of supporting local authority, has it always been that, or was it just that if you went back 30 or 40 years, most of the local governments were Republican governments, and we saw more states and the federal government more in Democratic control?
I think that's part of it. I mean, you know, a lot of this language is used in a very sort of advantageous way and often circumstantial. That is, when you control the local governments and someone else controls the federal government, that's where you favor local control. When you control the higher level government and someone else controls the local government, that's where you favor sort of more consistency across different jurisdictions.
Back to this lawsuit, does it carry any different kind of weight coming from the city of Houston versus, say, Harris County, which has been more directly at odds with the state legislature, maybe more often in recent years, and for instance, found itself and only itself the subject of an election law passed during the regular session?
Well, I think, I mean, it's in this case, if you focus only on, you know, the policymaking process, you know, city administration, city management, I think that when you look at it, it's very important that the city of Houston saying that it's, you know, the fourth largest city in the United States, depending on how you measure it, and obviously has important implications. I mean, running a city is a very complicated business, right? It entails everything. So curtailing the ability for city administrators, regardless of politics, right? Just put aside politics if that's possible. But that complicates how policymakers and especially urban planners and urban administrators have to react to provide the services that people are expecting from the city. Now, there can be a point, right, where, you know, the city is going to raise its hands, any city in Texas, and say, like, I cannot do it. You know, tell your state representative to change the law. Why? Because that's the ability. And I haven't met a mayor that is going to be very happy, regardless, again, of political party, because that limits their ability to react to the needs, wants, and preferences of their own residents.
Right? Well, it would also kind of freeze everything in place on any kind of – there's some sort of development that somebody wants to create. And there is this question about, well, there's no ordinance that applies here, or there's an ordinance that says you can't do that, and they want to change it. If the answer is, well, it's up to the state legislature, well, the state legislature is only in session for 6 months every 2 years. So what? Everybody just stands around for a year?
Well, that would be part of it. The other would be trying to figure out if it's consistent with state law. And usually, I think where you're going to see the most conflicts are not where there is no state legislation, but where it's where the city legislation is not supported by the state. So something the cities or counties are trying to do or already doing in most cases cannot be supported by state law. Someone's going to challenge that in court. On your other question, I don't think that at the end of the day, there'll be much of a difference whether it's the city of Houston or Harris County. It's going to be ruled more on either on the law or Republican-Democratic basis. Certainly, though, the county is one of the reasons why this legislation was passed, because Harris County has been one of the counties pushing the progressive agenda more than, say, the city of Houston, certainly more than Dallas County. It's more like along with Austin that has drawn the attention of the legislature. In the legislature, the way they phrase it is whack-a-mole, in the sense that the cities and counties do things, then they have the state has to wait until the next legislative session to reverse them, whether it's related to bag bans or related to drilling for fracking or Chick-fil-A's in San Antonio. They have to wait. This is their sort of, they're trying to preempt it all. But by doing so, they're doing using such a broad brush, I think they're going to create a nightmare for cities and counties trying to enforce ordinances that have a broad consensus among the population.
But I mean, on the other hand, it's what Mark alluded to this, and it's about certainty, right? You said, for example, an investor wants to do a new development project somewhere. So what investors want is certainty, right? And that certainty comes obviously from the laws, city council, local ordinances, the county, and obviously the state. But in this play where we have a biannual state legislative session, right, it's you can interpret the law one way, and then comes a session and it changes, right? You are 2 years deep into a development process that in the next couple of years can change, right? Can change at the Texas Supreme Court or in federal court or whatever it is. So having the local certainty allows developers to know, well, this is the city ordinance, right? This city ordinance is respecting is taking into account the needs, wants, preferences from the local constituency where the development is going to take place. So you're basically legislating and giving that certainty from hundreds of miles away from where that development is taking place. So to me, that's, you know, poor policymaking process that is going to hinder, you know, investors, somehow investors wants to invest in a particular community. Say, well, maybe I'm going to take my money in a state where I have that certainty. And that's it. Regardless, again, this is, you know, normal certainty in terms of return on investment, regardless of political parties.
Mark, in a battle over state versus local authority, will it always be an uphill climb for cities and counties, especially in the state of Texas?
Well, it'll be an uphill climb, especially when it's a Democratic-run county like Harris County or a Democratic-run city like Houston, going eventually to a all-Republican Supreme Court and challenging legislation that was passed with a broad consensus within the Republican Party.
We're discussing developments in politics in our regular Wednesday political roundup. Up next, more from Mark and Geronimo on the Supreme Court's spring term and other goings-on in politics as Houston Matters continues. This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. We're discussing developments in politics in our regular Wednesday political roundup today with the University of Houston's Geronimo Cortina and Mark Jones from Rice University. On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its final opinions of its spring term, and among the major developments in the final days, it sided with a Colorado web designer who wanted advance clearance to deny wedding services to same-sex couples. The Supreme Court also struck down the Biden administration's debt forgiveness program for folks with college loans. The High Court effectively ended the use of affirmative action in college admissions, and the week prior, the Supreme Court rejected a challenge from Texas and Louisiana to the Biden administration's guidelines for who immigration officials can target for arrest and deportation. They said Texas and Louisiana lacked standing to bring the case in the first place. What are your major takeaways from this Supreme Court term?
Well, it's a potpourri, right? You have a mixed reaction. Everyone was expecting to have a very, very conservative Supreme Court decisions, but it has been mixed. We have seen some coalitions between more conservative and the most liberal members of the Supreme Court. We have seen, you know, very conservative decisions in 5 out of 14 decisions, if I'm not mistaken. And that signals the internal, I guess, worries within the Supreme Court, especially those of Chief Justice Roberts. One way is to be obviously on having an interpretation that is legal, that falls within the Constitution. And then the other one is the reputation of the court. If the reputation of the court is going to be maintained outside the political arena, or if those decisions are going to be interpreted as, you know, just another political actor within the political process. And then we have, I think, you know, creating a very interesting debate. And that very interesting debate is whether, you know, the Supreme Court eventually and those who are members of the Supreme Court have a very clear interpretation of the Constitution as the letter of the Constitution, just plain and simple. The Constitution says this, that's it. And those that see the Constitution as a living document. And I think that that conversation is going to start taking more and more and more traction in terms of how do we see the Constitution and how the Constitution guides the decisions, not only with the Supreme Court, but obviously with all the ramifications that that has.
Mark, it does seem as if we saw enough in terms of decisions this term and in the last term to suggest that there are probably three justices that sit very ideologically on the left, three that sit very ideologically on the right, and three that we would probably all, most all characterize as pretty conservative, but who will within that realm shift a little bit left or right. Is that your perception?
Right. And as Geronimo mentioned, I think those three middle justices are also concerned not just for what the Constitution says, but the standing of the Supreme Court. And knowing that if the Supreme Court strays out too far away from public opinion on too many issues, that undermines the legitimacy of the court. Justice Roberts, I think, is the main leader there, although we also see Justice Gorsuch as a major contributor. Overall, on in this past session, they did a mixture. So things like redistricting, they sided with the progressive case. Same with immigration. But on two of the most pivotal cases in terms of the broader impact over on society, we saw the 6-3 conservative majority come through, and that was in affirmative action as well as in the Biden student loan.
Back to Texas and the state capitol. Tony Busby says suspended AG Ken Paxton will not testify at his impeachment trial in the Texas Senate. Mm-hmm. Busby, of course, Houstonian, representing him, attorney representing Paxton. This is not a traditional criminal trial. Couldn't the Senate force Paxton to testify?
The Senate can force or impel witnesses to appear, whether Paxton is going to testify or not, or say anything, that's a different story. And the rules were adopted by the Senate, and the Senate has that particular, discretion to say this or that, et cetera, et cetera. And these are the rules adopted by a Republican majority in the Texas Senate. So it's going to be interesting to see, once again, this standing in terms of suspended Attorney General Paxton, saying that, you know, the law does not necessarily, or these legal procedures does not necessarily apply to them. Because, you know, I don't see that anyone that is under a legal situation or criminal investigation or whatnot saying, well, these particular articles of impeachment are just meritless and they're absurd. Therefore, I'm not going to, you know, go through the process. So that's also another indication that might, you know, complicate things during the trial that starts in September.
Mark, a second special session got underway a little over a week ago. As we discussed on last week's roundup, Governor Abbott's called it solely to cover property taxes and has been specific on how he'd like tax cuts passed. Any movement yet from either the Texas House or Senate on this?
No movement at all. The Senate is still sticking with its plan, which is a mixture of increasing the homestead exemption from $40,000 to $100,000, engaging in some compression, reducing taxes for everyone, including businesses, and then providing some special benefits for small businesses. The governor is still 100% focused on compression, that is reducing the taxes in the interim. One thing I wanted to mention on Paxton, if we have time, is
sure.
One of the interesting things I think we're going to see Paxton and his attorney, Tony Busby, come up with is promoting what's called the forgiveness doctrine. And that is under Texas law, under statutory impeachments, you can't be tried for something that occurred prior to your most recent election. That doesn't necessarily apply to the Texas Senate, in this case, because this is a constitutional impeachment. But if the lieutenant governor and Republicans in the Senate are looking for a way that they can effectively let Paxton off, but without essentially denying the fact that he committed these crimes, which just seems pretty obvious, the forgiveness doctrine would allow them to say, well, you know, he may or may not have committed these crimes, but since he did so prior to the most recent election in November of 2022, none of this applies. Therefore, case closed.
And that's not necessarily clear that just because it happened before he was reelected, as opposed to before he was ever in office.
Right. No. If we were in a statutory impeachment, it would be. That is, their Texas Supreme Court precedent is very clear that it is the most recent election. But this is a constitutional case. However, if the senators are looking for a way to effectively essentially worm their way out of essentially a conviction, that would be a good one.
At this hour, the city of Pasadena is swearing in Emmanuel Guerrero, the first Latino to represent Pasadena City Council District C and the youngest elected city council member in Pasadena's history. What should this remind us about the changing demographics in Pasadena and in other Houston area communities?
Well, I think it's very indicative, right, of where, you know, the state is going. Latins are, you know, the majority population that is growing consistently across, you know, every single U.S. census. So just indicates that, you know, perhaps it's, you know, a welcome addition to see these changes, especially in the city of Pasadena. The city of Pasadena is a majority Latino city, and having people that are representing their community, regardless of their race, ethnicity, or background, is extremely important because, you know, the closer the representatives are to their communities, the better job they're going to be making solving the issues of their particular constituents.
We'll have more discussion of local, state, national, and international politics on Town Square today at 3 o'clock here on News 88.7. Geronimo Cortina is the co-host of Houston Public Media's Party Politics program. He is also an associate professor of political science at the University of Houston. Mark Jones is a political science fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Geronimo, Mark, thank you both very much.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.